Welcome back to the Big Dog Podcast, official podcast of Chicago Hounds Rugby, brought to you by Life Cycle. I'm your host, James English, and as usual, I'm joined by head coach Chris Latham.
James, how are we?
Good to have you back. And a slightly different flavour this week, as we are joined by assistant coaches Todd Dammers and Noel Reed.
That's right, James.
Welcome, guys.
Later.
Let's go straight into it. Chicago Hounds, two-year-old team, probably underperformed. You guys come in, you inherit a squad. Todd and Chris, you've worked together before. Noel, you haven't. Where do you even start?
Yeah, I guess as a head coach, you want trust and you want alignment is probably the number one key, because everything starts from the top. And I'd obviously worked with Todd before with Samoa, but then before Samoa, I didn't even know Todd. Sometimes I wish I still didn't know Todd. But,
you mate.
But in all honesty, you know, I knew Todd. I'd obviously worked with Todd, and I knew we'd work well together because we had that trust and that alignment, and we both knew that the importance of that. And then obviously with Noel, had no idea of Noel or who Noel was. He was recommended by yourself or put forward by yourself, and I guess then speaking with other people spoke very highly of him and what his capabilities were. And I guess then it was just about opening that communication lines and starting to understand what made Noel tick, who he was as a person, what his strengths and weaknesses were. And to be honest, I then started to enjoy what Noel was talking about because his strengths were my weaknesses. And it allowed me then to understand and know that, one, I could grow and learn with his knowledge and what he brings to the table, being an X-10, being a playmaker. But ultimately, his demeanour was the number one thing that picked it for me and made me calm enough to want to work with him. Was Todd and I are very hot-headed, very, very emotional, very in the moment.
I've not
noticed. if you haven't noticed, where Noel is very calm, cool and collected. From day one, that Todd was never going to be down running water and running messages. So to have someone that's cool, calm and collected and measured, and then obviously added to that, his rugby IQ was obviously a winner.
Well, that and the other four candidates turned the job down, right?
No, they'll lined up, James.
But we'll start with you, Noel. And obviously, like, you came from I didn't really know you that well. I knew of you a lot from my time in Ireland, but it was Dave Carney who played for us who said, like, you should really have a chat with Noel, and also from playing with Toronto. But obviously, you've been in some of the most winningest environments in world rugby. So, I mean, that was really interesting. But also to have someone who had played MLR with Toronto and done some coaching in Canada and understood what you were getting into. What's that journey been like?
Yeah, it's been pretty interesting so far. It all happened pretty quickly. I think you gave me a call in kind of the end of August, and a couple of weeks later I was talking to Leito and we're getting ready to get stuck into planning the season. So yeah, I've only been coaching for around a year, so I loved it so far. I think at the moment it's hard to almost step back because we're so in the mix of it at the moment. It's week to week and it's getting pretty intense. I think when the season finishes, I'll be able to kind of look back and, you know, assess how it went properly. But no, I've been very fortunate to work with Leito and Todd so far. I think me and Leito's first conversation in the interview, then post that, was him saying he was gonna, like, you know, give me some reins in certain areas of training and the session plan with the team, and then kind of see how we go. So, you know, my plan from the start was just to, you know, try, I wouldn't say impress, but just kind of do my job and then go from there. So played in Toronto, so I had a bit of a feel for what the league is like, the standard. And yeah, I think every year so far, even watching and playing, it's progressed. I think you'd agree with that. This year has been a big advocate for how good the league is. I think there's been some amazing games. Even the players we deal with are really, really high quality.
How hard was it to switch that mindset from an MLR player to becoming an MLR coach?
I think I was lucky that my career, the way it kind of developed towards the end, I didn't play a massive amount of rugby in the last maybe 2 years of my career. I had a few injuries and just wasn't getting picked in certain clubs. So I kind of had that transition period I had the transition period while still playing, which is kind of weird. So I was able to kind of step back. Like, I was sitting in meetings, I was getting involved in meetings as almost an outside figure while still being in it. So the transition was pretty easy for me. I think it might have been more difficult if I went from maybe Leinster to straight into coaching, because, not to sound like I didn't have any friends in Toronto, but I was on my own there. I was I was the older guy in the squad. I wasn't necessarily, you know, hanging out with all the young guys. So it was pretty easy just to transition into it. I didn't feel like I was wanting to kind of still be a player, I suppose.
Yeah, fair. Todd, your route slightly different. Like, some of the best rugby coaches in world rugby, you came from more like the school coaching route. Mm. You look at the Stuart Lancasters and other guys who had huge success. How does that differ from, like, say, like Noel's route, coach-wise?
Yeah, so I've coached probably more than I played now. Like, so I started coaching a schoolboy footy when I was 22. So I guess in a lot of cases, you learn to make a lot of mistakes and be okay with making mistakes and trying things. So schoolboy footy, especially in where Lathan and I are from in Queensland, it's some of the best rugby in Australia. So, and you get some of the best athletes. And so to be able to, I guess, develop with them as a coach, that was probably one thing, is that ability to try different things and to try it out with really, really great young athletes. And so you transition into coaching, and you transition into professional footy and back into club. And so I've had a bit of a roller coaster career, which I actually love. Like, I've been to Spain and all over in Japan and all over the place, and each of them have taught me something different. And then you get to a squad like the Hounds have got, and you get to sort of play with it a bit and learn from those experiences. So for me, I probably, like I said, coming through that pathway is more about development of the individual player, because, one, they're sponges and looking for it, but also development as a coach, because you're learning just as much as they are. So it's been good. It's been a journey, that's for sure.
And you guys coached together with Samoa?
Yeah. So that's where I first met Todd. We went on the World Cup qualifying tour to Germany and...
I think it was Fiji and to Samoa. It's where Latho worked out that I wasn't going to run messages, because I was probably not as crazy as he was, but we were a good duo on the sideline, that's for sure.
And that's where we met, and we was a pretty, what would you call it, a quick introduction to each other, because one of the first places we went to, the hotel was such a small hotel, and we went into we were rooming together. And they were single beds, and they were almost a double bed put together. That's how much room we had in that circumstance.
Did you drop the tail, or?
We were almost at that position.
I think I said at the time, it's the closest I've slept to him that I have to my own wife in like 10 years, because I had a king size bed. So
who's a big spoon?
Well, Latho's a snorer, so I try to go the other side.
I cut down Amazon.
How important is it having people that you have worked with before and trust, and how quick can you get a grip on like someone's character and whether they're the sort of person that you can work with and be successful with?
I don't think it's so important to have worked with someone that I've worked with before. Hugely important on someone that I can trust, definitely, because I've seen as a player great teams not succeed because there wasn't the alignment from the top down. And then I've been in average teams that have had such great alignment, and it's made the team even better purely because of the alignment. How quickly that comes, it's funny with rugby. Rugby is the landscape of rugby changes from day to day, hour to hour. And it's when the pressure comes on, you see the true character of who you're working with, and so you can figure it out pretty quick. You know, pressure comes differently at different times, but there is always pressure. So it doesn't take a game to create pressure. It can a certain circumstance, a training, a conflict with a player, you know, or a question from a player can change that dynamic and bring a lot of pressure on you instantly. And how you answer that and how you conduct yourself certainly shows the kind of person you're going to be.
And that pressure is very different probably from what you learned as a player to then into management or coach. So like, how is that pressure different and what does that look like? And have you taken some of the things that you learned as a player of dealing with pressure at the highest level of the game and been able to transfer that into a coaching context?
Yeah, definitely. I think when I first became a coach from a player, I thought I had to have all the answers. I thought every answer and for every question I needed to be the one that had... Could walk, the player needed to walk away from me knowing everything. And I quickly realized that that's that wasn't the case. I didn't need to be that person. What I needed to do and what I found better as a coach now is to try and draw the answer they want out of the player, because they're going to learn from the experience of trying to find the answer. And once they've been able to work the process out of, okay, I've got this problem, I've now been given the tools to try and find the answer to that problem, and now I've figured out the problem, it's embedded in me now of, one, how to deal with those pressures later on, but then also it's an embedded skill that now I know the answer to, as opposed to being told, just do that. And it becomes a in one ear and out the other, because there's no learning process in that. And that's probably been the biggest thing, transition for me from player to coach.
Noel, you've worked with some of the biggest names in rugby from a coaching perspective. What have you learned from that, from the different coaches you've worked with?
Yeah, I think I was pretty lucky in my career to be at Leinster. So I grew up there, got to play there for the majority of my career. And I suppose the most I learned maybe about the understanding of a team was kind of when I left Leinster, and how you can kind of do it differently. Like, so I went to Leicester and the culture was completely different there. But again, you know, it was used in a good way. You know, it wasn't.
It's still a hugely successful environment, right?
Hugely successful environment. Like Leinster, the way it is like a majority of the guys are from Dublin. So it's like you're very similar people. Like, you know, you're similar skills, parents do similar things, you know, which is, you know, in a good way, you are already probably have that bond before you get even into the training ground. Like, you have that kind of bond because you've potentially played with guys in school, etc. But then when you move away, you understand the benefit of working with people who are different, like, you know, so different cultures, understanding who they are, what's, you know, good about where they are from and all that kind of stuff. So I think the clear kind of like positive thought I had on like good coaches in my eyes when I was playing was they had like a clear idea of how they wanted the game to play be played. And I think it's a skill as a good coach, and they're all good coaches, was explaining to the players in a way, in a simplistic way. So it wasn't, you could understand as a player exactly what he wants me to do in defense and attack. This is how we want to play. And off the back of that, then the players can almost coach themselves. So I think it's very hard to do.
Todd, how do you develop that philosophy of like the way you believe the game should be played? Is that through coaches you've worked with, teams, or is that just the way that you view the game?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think like listening to like Noel and Laith talk about it is it's a bit of a combination of everything. It's also the players that you've coached. Like, I probably came in with a different game plan for myself into this role, because having a look at like our squad list and how experienced we were and what have you, it's as a coach, you sort of come in and go, this is exactly how we want to be, but how do I get that message across? And Laith would tell you this, having known me for a while, is I'm a lot more hands off with this group in terms of the intricacies, but I had a clear vision that these guys needed to run this themselves to be successful, because part of it is that we also want to develop the US rugby. And there's boys within that who also then need to take that next step. So other coaches that I've worked with along the way who have either had rugby union or rugby league backgrounds, they've always been crystal clear in what they want to do, but it wasn't overly complex either. It's just to the point. And so for us, for me, it's probably just over a period of time just working out what that group needs at that moment. And I would say that less is more with this group, like in terms of what I'm saying with our boys, is that they also need that space to be men and run their own business. So I think, you know, I'm really happy with where they're at. I think we can be better, but I think they've also developed quite a great deal. That's from where we're at. So, yeah.
Oh, how, from your experience, how important is empowering players, and how does that affect them culturally?
Yeah, I think it shows a sign of trust, I suppose. So if you do have like a simplistic game plan and it's clear, that's is almost giving trust to the player, you know, and then in turn, you're going to get that back. You know, they're probably going to perform better. You're going to get that probably buy-in from the squad, because, okay, they're not asking a crazy amount of us here, but if we stick to this plan, if we stick to how they want the game to be played, you know, we're going to be successful. So I think it's a trust between the player and coach. I think you show it, you'll probably get it back. And then, you know, that'll probably build a good culture off the back of it, because there's honesty, it's clear, you know, there's no kind of mixed messages. Like, players don't like that. Like, they like to be told exactly how it is, and then, you know, an honest decision or an honest conversation off the back of it. If something was done wrong or right, you know, it's pretty clear.
You talked about culture, and you started talking about culture. We talked a lot about on the field, but then you take the off the field. And like rugby, I think one of the challenges, I'd love to know your opinion on it, is like rugby is a very social sport. And a lot of the way we grew up with rugby is like, a lot of it can be towards that off field of like drinking and getting together. Some of the boys have talked a lot about like how much they enjoy that aspect of rugby and how important it is in rugby. But from a coaching perspective, how do you balance that from like letting them have those moments that some of the players need or that they like, but also like, you know, reminding these guys that they're professional athletes?
Yeah, I think it's funny because you hear of all these professional sports players, the ones that come out publicly and go, I'm going to focus on my health and fitness, I'm not going to drink for a whole year. They end up having the best years of their life. That, you know, their career actually goes and their performances go off the chart. But I've also seen the flip side of that as well, where some people need that release. That some people need to be able to let go of the stresses of what the rugby brings and be able to do that. And I think, again, it becomes, you've got to know your squad, you've got to know your players. Majority of the players, and 98% of them, are grown men. And of that 98%, over 50% of them have got their own families, their fathers, their husbands. So telling them what they can and can't do is not going to build trust. Telling them what they can and can't do isn't going to build a culture. But getting them to understand that the choice that you make is going to have, every choice is going to have a consequence to it. Mm. If you turn up and you don't show up and you don't perform, well, then you're doing something wrong here and you've got to make a change. That's when you step in. But if you can do it and do what you want to do there, and you get the need, your needs are fulfilled and you're able to fulfill your needs here, then balance the two is fine and it's going to work.
And I guess if you're creating that culture of empowerment and ownership on the field, that level of trust has to come also off the field, right? You've got to empower and create, give them ownership and let them a little bit kind of manage that aspect of the culture themselves. I've one last question for the guys who have, you know, you've coached and played all around the world. Have you found a difference between the rugby player globally and the American athlete? And from a coaching perspective, these American athletes come from different sports to perhaps we have done, like multi-sport athletes. Does that change the way that you have to coach or work with players?
I would just say, I think probably for me, the biggest thing is they're athletically incredible. Like I don't think everyone will tell you that they're unbelievable athletes. I think the biggest thing is they have to think a lot about the game. They're still in that like developmental stage in terms of like where you see a young or even an old bloke, like I'm taking the piss out of Lathy, like you get him on the field still and the competitive juices, and it's backyard footy style things where, like, you know, we all grew up playing footy on the streets or in the backyards where it's structured and it's very, you go to training, you go to games and all those things for a lot of these American lads where we grew up watching on the TV or played in the backyards with older brothers and what have you and kids around the street. So it's a lot more instinctual, but athletically they're unbelievable. And sometimes we're trying to get them to find that instinct. I would say to you that, like, even he's the man of the moment at the moment, like young Peyton Wall. If you watched him, he just looked like he's playing on instinct. Gets the ball and just goes. Doesn't think, just sees it and just goes. And so that to me is, he's a little bit of an outlier of that look. He's an instinctual beast.
I think there's like a positive and negative to them not probably having like that experience Todd said of maybe watching it or playing like unknowingly as a kid, learning these skills. I think the positive aspect is that their appetite to learn is like so high. Whereas sometimes I can imagine playing with guys, they think they know it all already, like, you know. So there's the balance of a guy who's maybe grown up with the game, watched it, got into an academy, maybe thinks he's better than he is. I presume that's challenging to coach. Whereas we, and my experience so far, is a lot of young guys who just want to learn. You know, how can I get better? What do I need to do? So that's probably a positive side to that lack of experience, maybe.
Well, it's great getting an insight into your experience so far, either as a player or as a coach, but also in MLR and clearly your impact on the Hounds so far has been great, and we look forward to see where that journey takes us for the rest of the year. But we thank you all for your time. This has been the Chicago Hounds official podcast, the Big Dog Pod, brought to you by Lifecycle. See you soon.